You're listening to New Churches Podcast, a production of Send Network on newchurches.com. We discuss all things church planting. If you're looking to take your next step toward multiplication, you're in the right place. newchurches.com provides relevant and reliable resources for church planters, church multipliers, and disciple makers. Our growing library features pastors, planters, and church leaders like Ed Stetzer, David Platt, Trillia Newbell, Christine Hoover, Dahati Lewis, Trevin Wax, and many others.
Hey, welcome to another episode of the New Churches Podcast. This is episode 8 billion of the New Churches Podcast. And we're going to have an interesting conversation about church planting. And the application will be in urban context. Actually, there'll probably be application in lots of different contexts. We're for church planters in all kinds of settings and situations. But we're going to talk particularly about church planting in the Big Apple. Now, for those of you who are listening in Malaysia or listening in Senegal, like, what is the Big Apple? Well, that's actually the name for the capital of the world, New York City. And so I was just there at the time of this recording, about 5 days before this. So I'm excited to talk about church planting in New York City. Church planting in New York City is not it's similar in some ways, dissimilar in others. But when you're in a major urban context, I think this will have some application directly for you. But then in general, some of the principles will be applicable everywhere. So I have two guests who are actually planting in New York City. And they are James Roberson leads a growing, young, diverse church called Bridge Church in downtown Brooklyn, New York. He's previously served in four church plants. He and his wife, Natasha, have three children. Taylor Field, actually for years, served at Graffiti Community Ministries, was a pastor there. But now he's a Send Relief missionary and has continues to live in New York City. He's now the regional director for Compassion Ministries in the Northeast. He's written several urban ministry books. I think I've endorsed one or two of them. And he and his wife, Susan, have two married children. And for them, I've known Taylor for a long time, James less so. But for Taylor, I've known him in New York City for as long as I've thought about New York City as a Christian. So he's been there a very, very long time. For those of you who don't know, I grew up, I was born, taken home to a home in Queens, in right Floor Park side of Queens, and then out in Levittown. But really, the kind of conversation I have today is very different because when we talk about some urban core issues, there's a New Yorker vibe, but also there's an urban core New Yorker conversation as well. So in a lot of ways, New York City is seen as maybe the Mount Everest of church planting. It kind of became cool for a while. And I think Tim Keller helped with that. That's where I was doing some training for the Manhattan church planters that are a part of the Redeemer. I don't know what they call city to city, but they're Manhattan church plants. Mm-hmm. But a lot of folks have tried. A lot of plants have died. A lot of people want to try. Other than the obvious massive size, let me start with Taylor here. What makes New York City so complex from a missiological perspective, Taylor?
Well, Ed, for me, I'm just thinking about, we did ministry-based church planting, started with ministry and started in a storefront. I just have to say it's the incredible disparity that I see there. Growing up suburban situation, I didn't see that. I mean, it's this, we sometimes say it's, New York City is, it's not a melting pot, it's a tossed salad. And there's all these different approaches right next to each other. We don't merge together, but where we started, just be honest that we had our first teenage group. It's probably 8 teenagers. And I realized that six of them in public school couldn't read. Now they're 25 blocks from Wall Street. And so it just was the incredible tension of that. We rebuilt a synagogue. On one side is what they have called a squat. That's where people illegally occupied the building. And they were there in kind of a quasi-legal status. And on the other side of the church, there's the luxury apartments. And the church is right in the middle. And so to me, was the hardest thing. My mentor says the highs are higher, the lows are lower, and they're closer together in New York City. And that tension of the disparity is a pretty big part of that. I could go on. We also talk about in New York City and other places, my friend calls it old urban and new urban.
Yeah.
And old urban is my kid got arrested. The landlord won't do anything in my apartment. Here's the best food pantry. That's old urban. New urban is the struggle of do I get a macchiato or a cortado at the hip coffee shop. And so there's some tension there with that. Yeah. So that is the first thing. And I think it has some missiological implications, if you want me to go ahead and talk about that.
Yeah, I want to come back in and press in a little bit, because I do want to, though, affirm, you know, I was the interim pastor at Calvary there in New York City, across the street from Carnegie Hall. But what's fascinating is that's on West 57th Street, which is called Billionaire's Row. So I was there 18 months. The building, by the way, no longer exists. It's now torn all the way down to the ground, if you haven't been there, and they're rebuilding it. So the church sold the building, but they get like a condo-like structure in the new building. So it's, you know, but they're in the wilderness for a few years. All that to say, it is fascinating to me that it's on Billionaire's Row. West 57th Street, for those of you who know, is called Billionaire's Row. Yet the church had, well, the church has affluent people and very poor people, homeless people, and people who live in penthouses and on Central Park. So that economic disparity seems, as you said, it has missiological implications, particularly. How do you bridge some of those? Now, where you are, people probably don't know Manhattan. And again, we're not just talking about Manhattan, because we're going to Brooklyn soon, which is not the Brooklyn I grew up near. But explain the neighborhood you are, because you're in, because your neighborhood is not anything like when I first started interacting with you decades ago. And how, walk us through that history, and what are the missiological challenges with the changing demographics of your neighborhood?
Well, I think it's well said. I think for us, I think what you're talking about, Ed, when we started, there's a lot of abandoned buildings in our area and all kinds of homeless people all out in the park, and they're angry and they're setting fire to their own stuff because of things. And then there's a limousine that'll drive by and let someone off in a luxury apartment. And so there's that kind of tension. And we, you know, you hear, I know you know from being a pastor here, they say New York City's a tale of two cities. I think our neighborhood became a bipolar community, where people were very wealthy, were right next to people very poor, like you were talking about on 57th Street. And they were looking through each other. It was each were invisible. So one of the things that was a challenge for us, and I know James is a master at this, but it's, you know, we think that Jesus is he's the expert at creating unlikely friendships. How could we create a space where people are the billionaires can talk to the homeless? How can you create a space where that, I mean, that's to me, part of what the church is. I mean, Jesus is, it's the Sanhedrin guy and the leper and the beggar and the, you know, rich tax collector. How do you create a space where people in different places can safely communicate? And I think that's one of the missiological challenges we had.
Fascinating. Well, let's talk a little bit about what that looks like and head on over, in a sense, head on over to Brooklyn. So James, you're serving there at Bridge Church. Now, again, it's to me, again, the fact that Brooklyn is like this global brand is so far from my experience growing up. You know, Brooklyn rents were affordable. People who live there is working class, the whole nine yards. My family has a lot of roots and connections to Brooklyn, that Irish Catholic that doesn't exist much anymore. Mm. So what's it like there? And what are the missiological implications of what you're working through in Brooklyn? But again, keep in mind, for a lot of people, they don't know what Brooklyn's like at all, since they've watched a movie 2 decades ago. So what's it like? Right.
Well, I think gentrification hit about 20 years ago. That changed the flavor and the context of the city. For instance, Williamsburg, which is at the very edge of Brooklyn, right next to Manhattan, is now the hot place to live, even Park Slope. But these places, even 15, 10 years ago, were mostly Dominican, Puerto Rican, Black and brown spaces that were incredibly poor. And Bushwick still has that flavor now. But once gentrification came in, and gentrification, for those that don't understand that, that is essentially when new money comes into the space, mostly white folks, but definitely affluent, move into a space and in essence move out old neighborhood folks. And so there's a lot of tension. The community becomes a bipolar community. I think Taylor mentioned that. So within downtown Brooklyn, where I am, I'm not too far away from the Barclays Center on Atlantic Ave, you have a lot of different, you have a wide spectrum of financial implications. You have older folks who have been around the block for a long time. And then you've got new young folks coming in trying to make a business, or they're trying to get into dance, or they're trying to get into Wall Street, and they're living there in Brooklyn. So you have a hodgepodge of people. I think starting anything in New York City is incredibly difficult. We just were at our church was in a jazz club for in June. We had never been a morning service. We moved into a jazz club. The jazz club started in February of 22, it closed in June of 22.
Ouch.
Yeah. So grand opening, grand closing. And I would like to, you know, and I'd like to say that's new, but I've seen that happen so many times. There's a graveyard of, you know, neon signs in New York City. And I would say in the same way, there's a graveyard of prospectuses of church planters in the same way, because they come with a lot of dreams, a lot of energy. And at the end of the day, New Yorkers really don't care if it's new. They care if it's good. They don't care. And so your credibility is going to be based upon effectiveness. And what I've told church planters is, if you're good at relationships, if you're good at preaching, if you're good at events, if you're good at singing, do whatever you are good at and keep doing that, because New Yorkers care about authenticity and effectiveness. And if you can stay in those two lanes, you will, by God's grace, draw people to the community you're trying to start.
So, and what do you think, you say that it's difficult, you talk about, you know, neon signs crashing down and the challenges of church plants, a lot of church planting prospecti have not survived their plans. I think it was Mike Tyson.
Is that the plural of prospecti?
No, I've heard.
I feel that. I mean, if it is, I like that.
Let's use it. Let's go.
I feel that.
Prospectuses. I don't know. It's like
camp, I don't know.
I guess it's.
I'm with it.
Yeah.
But yeah. Is it honorarium or honoraria? I always wondered.
That's actually honoraria. So okay. You know, so, okay. But the honorarium seems weird. But
sorry, you were saying.
Yeah. Sorry, you got us a little distracted. But
sorry about that.
So when you think, you know, these people have kind of laid these plans out, I would say that everywhere there's kind of a littered ground of you know, failed church plants that it's just hard sometimes. But there's something different about going to a city like New York. And so what do you think? Because again, this would be someone in Dubai could hear this and say, all right, this is very similar to my situation. We've talked some about the bipolarity of the economics. We've talked some about the, I think, James, you sort of implied a little of the suspicion of the people. Yeah. So what other factors, we'll go first to James, what other factors make it harder to plant a church in New York City? I got to guess resources is one of the challenges.
It is, but before that, I would honestly say, cultural intuitiveness.
Yeah, please.
The ability to understand a community and that community understand you. I think for the most part, if you are getting someone, particularly from the South or just from somewhere else, and you do not have a Northeastern ruggedness. So somebody from Philly could probably come here. I grew up outside of New York City, somebody from Boston, but the Northeast has a certain level of intensity, honesty, directness to it that if you're not used to, one, that communication coming towards you or that communicating to that kind of audience, I think if they have suspicion, it only increases. And if you are going to create credibility, it's just going to be challenging. So I think honestly, just those cultural patterns in particular, when I got here, you know, I didn't have any people on my team or anything like that. I moved up here. It was hardcore parachute plant. And the first couple that I met was after a bunch of other people who did not want to get to meet me. And they were very angry that I was even interrupting their day. But I understand that as a New Yorker, I wasn't offended. I wasn't hurt. In fact, there were times where people cussed me out and I laughed about it because I understand the rhythm and patterns of just people. One of the things I tell people in the South is if you try to stop a person walking in New York, it's like stopping a person mid-traffic in the South. Because in New York, our traffic is people walking. It's not people in cars. So in the same way, a lot of times when you see people moving, they have some place to be. So they're not trying to make time for me. So when you understand the rhythms and the patterns of the transit, the density, the diversity, I think that gives you a better advantage. So all that to say, folks who have either moved here and been here 3 to 5 years, or they've grown up within the region, they tend to do a little bit better because they understand the cultural path. They have a natural understanding, and I would even say an intuitiveness about the cultural patterns of the region and the city.
Yeah, that makes sense. And it is learnable, but it is jarring for people. Timothy George has been one of my theological mentors, and he told me, he went to Harvard, and he told me once, because as people will tell you, when I lived in the South, I'm a little too much of a Yankee for most people. But he took the train up, and he got off at the station there at Harvard. He said he was on the train. He sneezed. And just as he was pulling up, I think it was, to Harvard's train station, and someone just looked at him and said, "Shut up." And I was like, welcome to, not God bless you, but welcome to Boston. Now, you know, I would say, too, that my experience has been, having planted in New York and Pennsylvania and more northeastern places, is that some of the most welcoming Christian folks, when they get changed, man, they get changed. It's not cultural religion. So, Taylor, I want to come back to you, because I actually agree with, and I'm guessing you agree with everything James said, but also, like, I'm in the Midwest, right? So I'm training people at the Wheaton College Graduate School, and maybe someone wants to go plant a church in New York City. I would tell them pretty much what James said, but I would say, you're going to have to learn to relate in that cultural context. Is there a path to learn? It might be, I think James is right that it's probably easier if you grew up in that cultural context, but New York City seems to have a lot of people from different backgrounds. Can that Midwesterner, can that Northwesterner, can that Southerner learn these skills? And if so, how?
Yeah. And that's good, because both of you guys, both of you grew up in the Northeast. I grew up in Oklahoma. So I've been in Manhattan for over 35 years, but I think that I would just say first, as I respond to that, Ed, is just weighing in from coming from Oklahoma, and maybe people are listening. What's the hardest part? It's the fear for your family.
Yeah.
What's the issue? And space. As you know, I mean, you know, our apartment was 700 square feet. We had loft beds, bicycles hanging from the ceiling, two teenagers. And I think it's that fear. How can I do that was one of the hardest things. And that's part of acculturating. And so one of the things for us was family. And one of the things that helped us understand that part, Ed, was when we got there. I mean, you know, I grew up in Oklahoma. I walked a half a mile when I was 5 years old to kindergarten. You know, no one's, you know, here is a different world. So we found people, and we're listeners that we thought were doing well with families, and said, what did you do that helped with your kids? And that was a way to just, I think, of course, obviously, it's just being a listener. If you're going to learn a culture, like Bonhoeffer says, you can't speak the words of God until you listen with the ears of God. So the big thing is just to be a listener. And I do think, you know, we'll say this often, kindness crosses every culture.
Amen.
You know, we joke about this. At one time, Hurricane Sandy came in and we had generators out, and we were people cleaning out the buildings. We got a guitar player outside and we're handing out food. And there's this guy who hated Christians. And he was what they call a traveler. He lived on the street and had a dog. He was so angry at Christians. He was so mad. He goes, how come atheists aren't doing cool things like this? And that was an opening where we could begin to talk, and I could hear from him and he could hear from me.
Amen. Good. It's good. So you actually, when you planted, when you served there, you mentioned that you, Taylor, that you used ministry approaches, ministry evangelism. And again, that's a common thing kind of in some denominations, some spaces, but explain a little bit what that means. And then James, I want to talk about what's different and what's similar from what you did. So talk to us about that, Taylor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'll just say, James and I both walked through his year. We were coworkers in James' first year here, and he's a hero to me on a number of levels. But
I was a resident at his church. He was
there. You go.
He was awesome. So, you know, I think, just thinking about what we can do as we look ahead in terms of it, for us, we said, you know, a lot of times where I grew up, it was you had a church, people came to faith, and then you did ministry. And we call it upside down life. You do ministry, people come to faith, and then a church grows out of it. And that was what the model we use. It's not the only model. It's just what we use. But when you do things together, something happens. Even if you're different, there's something. I think James has a good point. You know, I mean, New York City is, they call it the vortex of money. I don't care what you're, just do a good job. So if we can work together, we don't have to get together and do therapy and navel gaze. Just to do something together helps break down some of those barriers. And I will say this, just there may be some people listening, just as a minority report, I totally agree. You know, it's you need to be in Northeast. There's a certain way of relating in the Northeast. But we've had some people, when someone really loves the people, they can overcome a lot of that. We had a woman, she was from a farm in Alabama. you know, rats were in the building. So no big deal. We killed rats with spades where we were, you know, not a big deal. You know, she's like, you know, and she, you know, she taught the kids when they wanted to teach Samson, she got a broom. She cut the hair off the broom to show them. I mean, they loved it. It was different culture. But, and by the end, where we were at that time, there, the drug economy is very strong. The drug dealers on the corner are saying, howdy, howdy, Mary. I mean, they, somehow they loved her and she loved them. And that crosses some of those things. So just because someone didn't grow up in the urban core, I think there's still opportunities there when you love, really love the people. I mean, I don't like the pollution, the smog. I don't like the noise. Sometimes I don't like there's not that many trees, but I do want to love the people. When that happens, a lot of barriers can be transcended.
It's the greatest city in the world. Great opportunity to love people there. So I love it. But I do, it is interesting. And James, one of the things that, because I actually agree with you, and I think partly longevity, you know, I would tell people when they move to Buffalo where we were, there are two things. Can you live through a winter and can you live through your first argument with your neighbor? Because people just, it just stuff escalates in both of those cases. So, and those are, I think those are realistic things. So there is a, you're going to have thicker skin, things of that sort. But I also, I mean, even when I was like, I was there with the Manhattan Church Planters, I mean, there was a really mixed group of people. They were from different places in the country because Manhattanites, you know, when I was at Calvary, I mean, there was, you mentioned Taylor's from Oklahoma. There was a dancer from Oklahoma who's making it big. And there's a, you know, there's the musician was from Arkansas, one of the elders. And then, you know, there's some of them were rooted, more rooted New Yorkers, and it's just a mix. So I do wonder if that is a missiological opportunity, because in New York City, it seems that so many people are from somewhere else. And we know that that becomes a gospel opportunity because people are rerouting themselves. Mm-hmm. But tell me a little bit about the kind of people you're reaching and unpack that a little bit with me, because I wonder how that relates. What does it look like in your world, James, with the people you're reaching, and how do you engage them cross-culturally more? And I should also mention too that your church is, you know, you've got a growing church in Brooklyn, but even your staff has a great sense of diversity. I'm looking over your webpage right now. So how does all that relate in an urban context?
Well, yeah, we're very diverse. We're 85% single, average age is 26. So we obviously reach a lot of young urban professionals. When we first started, we were mostly Black and brown. I would say about 80% Black and brown. I would say we're now about 60% Black and brown. And 40%, you know, just a whole swath. We've never done like a survey. I think that so we have a lot of people who are getting out of college and either moving here or already here. I would say we're mostly native Brooklynites within the church, or native New Yorkers. To go off of something though that Taylor said, I think that when you love people, as Taylor does so effectively there at his church, I think what it creates is a level of compassion that people can be drawn to. But I will say this, and Taylor, let me know if you don't agree with this, but I think as you increase in economy and a certain type of person, I think they want to see you be compassionate and have a level of certainty, meaning that they want to feel loved, but they also want to feel led. And I feel like as you get these young urban professionals, they want to feel cared for and connected. But, you know, there's a certain level of certainty that they're looking for in your vision and your clarity and your insight and communication. And so I've found that, you know, New Yorkers, you know, they can be rough and tough and all this. But there's a intense level of progressiveness here. And so you need to know what you believe. And so in our membership class, we do a FAQ, and I handle everything from gender to teaching to leadership and all those different things. But the reason why is because, by what I mean by gender, meaning like sexuality, because that's such a hot topic within our community. And I've found that it's better just to hit it right in the head, because we've got a lot of thinkers and a lot of creatives, and it's offensive to them if we, you know, they find out late. So I've found that I have to be very deliberate and direct. I would also say, Ed, man, so I was born in 1976, and I can remember my dad, you know, kind of bemoaning, you know, Gen Xers. So I never thought I'd be that guy, But I'm going to have to be honest with you, man. Millennials are a different crowd, man. Yeah. And I've had to tailor my leadership towards a group of people that really want to be effective and great fast. And I think a lot of that is due to social media and them having a lot more opportunities to see a lot of different lifestyles, a lot of different success stories. So, you know, trying to get them to understand the Calvary Road, suffering, trials, that things take a long time, that the city, you've come up here with a dream. God's not really just impressed with your dream. He wants to see you be sanctified and grow. Those are things you have to just nail down into the core of our people in order for us to be a healthy church.
Can I respond to that too?
Oh,
I think, I'll tease James. We know each other. I mean, I think, you know, James is clear. He's got kind of a gravitas, man. I mean, he could read the phone book, and I think it's the voice of God almost.
Oh, this guy.
So, and I realize I don't have that, but I do think you're right about that certainty. And I think what we saw working with Compassion Ministry starting there is that it draws people that want to move from success to significance. Yeah. And so for me, my self-talk was, I believe they need to do that. Yeah. And I really passionately believe that. So I may not have that sense, or even someone that doesn't have a strong leadership capacity, when you believe something, that will help you communicate that, and that is contagious. And can I just say one other thing, Ed, that we talk about missiological complexity of New York City, yes. James touched on this. There's a missiological simplicity also. Mm-hmm. And this is what I mean. Like, one of the people that came to ours had a heart. He had been a missionary in West Africa and Mali, and he had to come back to New York City. He was a part of our church. And he had this realization. He goes, man, where I was there, I spent 4 hours driving to different people groups and trying to get to them. Here, they're all on top of each other on 116th Street in Harlem. Mm-hmm. And so there is that opportunity here that, you know, that every language, every tongue, and like you said, Ed, you know, anybody, you know, everybody's kind of welcome. You can be anything. You can have an accent like my accent, and you're still okay here. Mm-hmm. Because, and that gives you this, it's like Solomon prayed in the First Kings and in Chronicles. He has this prayer where, you know, everybody else is, you conquer nations and you take them over. It still happens today. But in his prayer, it's foreigners and people from all over streaming to the city to praise the name of God. Hmm. So it's an inverted view. And that used to be true of New York City exceptionally, but now it's true everywhere, all cities. People are streaming there. And if there's that vision that maybe that could be something that draws people to the Lord, that could simplify things rather than make it more complex.
It's a good word. Good, fascinating conversation today with, and we're actually going to, if you're subscribed to New Church's podcast, you're going to hear from them again together. James Roberson, Taylor Field, talking about New York City. Taylor already mentioned the diversity. New York City is not the most ethnically diverse city in the whole world, but there's more ethnic diversity present in New York City than any other city in the entire world. There are more ethno-linguistic people groups there, and we haven't even touched on some of that. More to come. Thanks for listening to the New Church's podcast.
You've been listening to the New Churches Podcast, brought to you by Send Network. If you like what you heard, take a few minutes to rate and review us or share this episode with a friend. It's the best way to show your support. To find more reliable resources to start your new church well, visit newchurches.com.
I'm Trevin Wax, and I have a new podcast called Reconstructing Faith. In it, we address the church's credibility crisis, reflecting on the challenges of today while learning from church history and the church around the world. Look for it wherever you get your podcasts.